Well, lead story, Press TV's correspondent Hassan Ghani has been released after spending almost 4 days in an Israeli jail. Hassan was traveling with the Gaza Aid Flotilla when he was abducted by Israeli forces. Reports just in say Hassan is now in Istanbul, Turkey. Earlier, he spoke with his father on the phone. Mr. Ghani has quoted Hassan as saying that Israeli forces confiscated his laptop computer after detaining him on board the Mavi Marmara. Well, let's talk to Hassan Ghani, who's joining us now on the phone from Istanbul to get a first-hand account of how he is and, of course, what he experienced. Hassan Ghani, it's good to have you with us. I'm hoping that you're okay, but first, tell us about yourself, and then we're going to get into details about what you experienced at the Mavi Marmara.
Yes, well, it's very good to be back on, free land. The atmosphere was incredibly tense in Israel. We were in complete confusion. Obviously, we've been suffering from a lack of sleep as well, and we didn't have anything to eat for the last 24 hours. So we're all in a bit of a strange kind of state at the moment. So you'll have to forgive me if I can't express myself fully. We're still trying to recover from the ordeal.
Hassan Ghani, we do want to talk, if you can, about your ordeal. Because we want to get a first-hand account of what's happened. Hassan Ghani, I don't know if you've been watching the media, but there's a lot of spins that are going on regarding what has happened. So why don't you first tell us what happened in the morning hours when the attack took place?
Well, as you know, the night before, we made a broadcast from the ship for Press TV in which we mentioned that three warships had approached the flotilla and were holding a distance. They were on the radar, but barely visible. Those ships then moved back out of the way once we kind of moved even further away from the coast. At that point, we were about 90 miles off the Israeli coast, so we were nowhere near inside the so-called military exclusion zone that Israel has placed, which was originally 20 miles and extended to 68 miles. So we moved away, but later that night, as the convoy made its way closer towards Palestinian waters, during the Fajr prayer, into the second prostration of the Fajr prayer, the Israeli soldiers began throwing stun grenades onto the deck of the ship and opening fire with rubber bullets towards the ship.
Okay, so let me come in here, Hassan, and ask you. So they boarded the ship and started firing the stun grenades and live ammunition?
No, they were throwing the stun grenades and rubber bullets, not live ammunition at this stage, stun grenades and rubber bullets from the boats on the side. They were trying to mount the ship, but the people on the ship were using hoses, you know, water hoses, to repel this attack. After that, they used helicopters to try and land on the roof. At this point, the captain of the ship was conducting evasive maneuvers, turning left, turning right, to try and keep those soldiers who were armed with at least two rifles each, maybe three, several weapons on them each, from coming down. At the same time, we had several very large Navy frigates on either side of the of the ship, and we had two helicopters overhead. One was trying to land; the other was circling above, also I think trying to land people onto the roof. Those people eventually did land on the roof, and they came down. And we heard gunfire. I'm not sure at that stage whether it was rubber bullets or live ammunition, but there was gunfire. And the people on the ship who had said that they would use their own bodies, they had no weapons on board, but they said they would use their own bodies to try and repel an illegal attack in international waters, did so. They used whatever came to hand, some wooden sticks, just their bare hands. And at this stage, I was actually very close to where the fighting was happening, and I saw two Israeli soldiers come down onto the main deck, and they were trying to get to the position where the cameras were broadcasting live. The volunteers on the ship held them back with their bare hands, and the soldiers tried to open fire with their machine guns. The volunteers pulled the guns away from the soldiers, and there was a struggle on the floor for quite a few minutes. I actually filmed all of this.
Well, Hassan, let me stop you right here. I need to get an idea from you quickly. The two soldiers, as you mentioned, they came down as soon as they hit the deck. What did they do?
They were trying to use their weapons because there was quite a few people there.
Why were they trying to use their weapons?
Sorry?
Why were they trying to use their weapons? What prompted them to use their weapons?
Because there were several people on the deck who weren't allowing them to pass, and they were trying to stop them from getting past, and they were trying to use, I think at this stage it was still rubber bullets. But once those soldiers were disarmed and taken inside, they were taken inside for their own safety, I should mention, because a lot of people were very angry that the Israeli Navy had tried to attack the ship. They were taken inside for their own safety. After that, that's when the live ammunition started to be used. And very soon after that, we had the first fatality. A man was shot right in the head between the eyebrows, which indicates that this was not an attack which took place and a shooting which took place in an affray. It means that the soldier had time to set up the shot and target him square in the forehead.
And could I ask you, Hassan, did it appear to you that the soldiers were acting based on a game plan that they had in mind when they descended onto the ship?
Definitely, yes. I mean, even in the Israeli media, they were talking about having rehearsed boarding and attacking ships, using their own sort of Israeli Navy missile boats. So they tried to implement the attack from the sides using the boats. When that failed, they went from the helicopter. They were monitoring from one helicopter while the other helicopter tried to come down. This was clearly pre-planned. It wasn't something just sort of spontaneous.
And take us through the moment that you said when we had the video footage from you saying that we're being attacked, there's several injuries, and you just mentioned that there was one man injured. Now you told us that he was shot in the middle of his head. Take us through the motions from that moment.
Well, at that stage, it was absolute, complete confusion and panic. We really did not expect the Israeli Navy to attack a civilian ship carrying humanitarian aid in international waters with such force. So once we saw the first fatality, everybody was in complete shock. He was still alive, even though he was shot in the forehead. People were trying to do something to help him. But at that stage, we heard other people go down, hit the deck because they'd been shot in the legs, in the arms, in the chest. So there was this confusion. The doctors that we had on board were running around trying to save lives. After that, we had our second fatality, our third fatality, and once that happened and we realized that there was no stopping, the leadership decided that they would raise a white flag and surrender. But despite that, despite raising the white flag, despite announcing on the radio they were surrendering, the live fire continued for some time. And even once we went inside, we still heard live fire coming from the roof. We've now been told we've still got conflicting numbers because we haven't had any access to the media until the last couple of hours. So we're not sure whether it's 9 people dead or 16 people dead or 19 people dead. But as far as we know, the minimum that were killed is 9 because we've accounted for that number between ourselves.